We continue the Shi'ur in Gemara. We completed the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, where he was finally brought to burial in the cave in Midon next to his father Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal. And of course this means that his wife remained as a widow. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal had, his closest friend was Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh means our holy rabbi, or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin. He was known with these three names. He was called Rabbi. Whenever the word Rabbi is found in the Gemara, just the word Rabbi alone, it refers to Rabbeinu HaKadosh or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. The Gemara says that now, after Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal was nistalek when he passed away, Rebbe sent a messenger to his wife asking if she would like to become Rebbe's wife, the wife of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He offered her marriage. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, by the way, Kadosh means he was extremely holy. In fact, we find nowhere else this, his degree of holiness in reference to his attitude towards the idea of women. Women, thoughts, speech, actions. He was pure as an angel in this respect. So here, he offered her marriage to become the wife of the Nasi, the wife of the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin. It was an honor. She sent back a message, very sharp and extremely type of retorting statement, where she said that a keli means a dish or utensil or an article that was used for holiness, how can this keli now be used for something which is ordinary? Keli that was used for Kodesh, how can it be used for Chol? Meaning that she was married until now to Rabbi Elazar, who was Kodesh, and for her to lower herself, to be married to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, in comparison, was Chol. This was a sharp statement. Rabbeinu HaKadosh sent back to her again and said, I admit that in the knowledge of Torah, he was greater than I am. In that respect, he is Kodesh compared to me. But in mitzvot, in purity, in holiness, was he greater than I am? She replied to this and said, well, as far as greatness and knowledge of Torah, I had no idea that he was greater than you until you admitted it yourself. But as far as being greater in holiness, this I knew implicitly. I had clear knowledge of this because of the fact that he purified himself through the Yisurim he took upon himself. Nothing can purify a person as much as suffering. It's like putting metal into a burning oven and all the soiled bits fall off, it comes out pure. That's how a body that goes through Yisurim, the Neshama, the soul, comes out pure. Especially since Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal had gone through 13 years in the cave with his father first, and then he took upon himself additional Yisurim, those years in which he had these nighttime Yisurim, and he had to eat the special meals in the morning. Very severe suffering. So this Yisurim made him certainly holier than you are. Now that you admit, she said, that he was greater than you in the study of Torah, I know now that he was greater both in Torah and in deeds, so surely I was right when I said, in comparison, he is Kodesh. Now the Gemara says, let's find out about this statement of Rebbe. Rebbe said that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal was greater than him in the study of Torah. Where do we find that? How did he judge that? Yehuda answers that they were both students. After the passing of Rabbi Shimon Meyachai Zal, both Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon and the Bein HaKadosh were chaverim, friends. They studied together in the same yeshiva under Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. At that time, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was the Nasi, the chief rabbi. He was the father of Rabbi HaKadosh. These were the two rabbis under which they studied. Custom was that the two rabbis sat on chairs, and the students, these two, sat on the floor in front of them. Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi sat on the floor in front of them as a matter of respect for their rabbis. But they were so bright, so sharp in the study of Torah, that the two rabbis said that it is not proper that they should be sitting on the ground, since they present such unique ideas in Torah, we should consider them as equals. Let them sit on chairs too. So they raised them, took them off the ground, and placed them on chairs, meaning that they were outstanding among all the students. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, I have one son there, that's Rabbi HaKadosh. You want to destroy my son? Because if you place him on a chair, what's going to happen? The other students will look at him begrudgingly, enviously, and give him an ayin hara. This could destroy him. This could kill him. Therefore, he said, I want him to be put back down on the ground. And he was. They put the Rabbi HaKadosh back on the ground. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kacha, the second rabbi, said, this is unfair, because the first one has a father who takes up his part, therefore he should live. Rabbi Elazar's father is not alive now, Shimon Chayezal, to take up his side, so we should let him sit on the chair and be subject to this possible Ayin Hara. We have to help him as an orphan too, let him go back on the ground also. He was put back on the ground, and he felt very slighted. Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon felt slighted and said, and all this talk, they're comparing me to Rabbi HaKadosh, as though we were both equals. I'm going to show them who is the superior in knowledge. The Gemara says, until then, up to that point, whenever Rabbi HaKadosh asked the question, Rabbi Lazar would come out with proof, strengthening the question. They both worked in unison. From that time on, when Rabbi HaKadosh asked the question, he was about to start asking it, Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon spoke up and said, wait a minute, before you ask the question, I'll tell you what you want to ask. This is your question, and here's your answer, and you're wasting our time asking questions that are so simple. This went on for some time. It was embarrassing for Rabbi HaKadosh. He was being made into a child in comparison. So he privately came before his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Nasi. He complained about this. Why should I have to stand this torment from Rabbi Shimon? Why is it that I want to ask a question? He knows the question. He has the answer ready. How come he's got this knowledge which I don't have? Shimon Gamliel said to him, I'll tell you why. Because he has something over you. He is a lion. Lion means a king, the knowledge of Torah. But he is a lion, the son of a lion. His father was a lion also, Shimon ben Yochayezal. You, my son, are a lion also, but you're the lion, the son of a fox. You don't happen to have a father that's that great. This was his answer. Later, Rabbi HaKadosh said, he made this famous statement, he said, I have seen people who are modest, who are humble. But I've never seen such humbleness as I've seen in three. There are three humble people in the world. One is my father, the Meshua ben Galil, the Nasi, when he called himself a fox. The son is a lion, the son of a fox. The second were the Bnei Beteda. They were many years back, many generations back, they were the Nasi, the Siim, chief rabbis of Eretz Yisrael, and a certain question arose on Pesach. They didn't have the answer. They summoned Hillel, the elder, to come, who gave them the answer, and they resigned from their posts. They said, we are the Nasiim, leaders, but we accept the superiority of Hillel. They were so humble that they accepted Hillel's superiority. They resigned from this all-important position. That's a true sign of modesty. Third modest person in history was Yonatan, the son of King Shaul. He was a prince. He was destined to take over the kingdom after his father would pass away. He was certain to become king. And yet he was very friendly with King David. And while they were friends, while King David was being harassed, pursued, he remained steadfastly friendly with him. And he said to King David, I am sure you're going to come out on top. You're going to become king, and I hope to be your assistant. Imagine that humbleness on the part of a prince who was going to get the kingdom automatically, that he was that humble that he said, he recognized the greatness of King David and said, I'll be your assistant. I'll be second in command to you. So the Gemara says, there is no proof of humbleness in two of the three cases. The case of Yonatan, the son of King Shaul, it wasn't because of humbleness, it was because he was clever. He could foresee the future. He could see that all the people were turning towards King David. They preferred King David over King Shaul. Now, in seeing that King David was going to get the kingdom, he was simply ensuring himself a high place in this kingdom, second to the king. Not because of modesty, but because of his shrewdness. Of course, he was very sincere in his friendliness, but this would not prove modesty. The case of the B'nai B'Teda, who surrendered the leadership of the Sanhedrin, the chief rabbinate, to Hillel, it was not humbleness. It was simple, sincere honesty. They saw that Hillel knew more than they did, so naturally they accepted his rule over them. They accepted him as their superior. Humble means where a person is great and considers himself lower than those beneath him. But one who considers a person greater than himself as truly greater, that's not humbleness, that's honesty. So there's no proof of anivut, of modesty, in these two cases. There's only one person who really showed true anivut, and that was the father of Enoch Kadosh, Shimon Gamliel. He was truly an anav when he said to his own son, you are the lion, son of a fox. The Gemara says that Rabbi Kadosh thought this over. The answer of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's wife, when she rejected him and sinned, Rabbi Elazar was greater than him as a tzaddik because he had gone through Yisurim. So Rabbi said, Yisurim are a wonderful item, and therefore I'm going to accept them willingly. I'm taking Yisurim upon myself happily. I'm willing to take suffering. He took upon himself Yisurim for a period of 13 years. Horrible type of suffering. 6 years he suffered with stones in the bladder. That's excruciating pain. And 7 years with toothache, a disease of the teeth and gums, also unbearable type of pain. A total of 13 years. The Gemara says, how painful was this? Rabbi Kadosh was the wealthiest person in the world. He was so wealthy that his stable keeper was even richer than the king, the governor there. And he had so many horses, so many cattle to feed, that when it came to feeding time, the roar that arose from all these animals could be heard for 3 miles. Rabbi Kadosh, when he got these attacks, he did it at a time when the stable keeper was about to feed the cattle, so that their roar should rise to a crescendo. to hide his screams of pain. Even as despite this roar of the cattle, his screams were so loud that they could be heard above the sound of all his, the cries of the cattle. So great was his suffering. And this was suffering of Ahava. Ahava means not due to sins, but due to his love for Hashem, willing to suffer. And what is good about suffering? The Gemara says that a tzaddik suffers for the sake of others. If he suffers, his suffering forgives for the Jew's sins, and it annuls any type of harsh gezeira, decree from heaven against the Jews. This is called Yisurim of Ahava. Because it's Yisurim of Ahava, Ahava is Begimetria 13. That's why, as a hint to that point, it's a symbol of Ahava. He accepted 13 years of suffering. Even it says, despite this, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was still greater than the Ben HaKadosh, because his Yisurim began by his own volition. He accepted it himself. They started because he asked them to begin. Ben HaKadosh's Yisurim started because of an incident that took place, not because of his own will. But after it started, he said, I want to retain this Yisurim for 13 years. Also, they ended because of an incident too. The Yisurim is what transpired. One day there was a calf that was being brought to the slaughter. And as it was going to the slaughter, it ran off and ran over to Rabbi HaKadosh, placed its head underneath his coat, and began to cry bitterly. The calf realized it was going to die. In a slaughterhouse, most places the cows or calves could see the line in front of them. They could see the other cows, calves being killed. They could recognize the fact that death is imminent. This calf came, and it couldn't speak. It just cried as though pleading with Rabbi HaKadosh for protection, for assistance to rescue it from death. Rabbi HaKadosh said, I can't help you. Go. You must go because you were created for this purpose. You have to. An animal is created for the sake of being slaughtered to be eaten. So I cannot help you. Immediately in heaven, a voice came from heaven and said, if he did not have pity on a living being, let Yisurim, suffering, come upon him. This is what started it. And of course, it would have been very temporary, but he took it upon himself for 13 years. It ended after 13 years when one day the maid, the home of Ben HaKadosh, was sweeping the house. And there were tiny little weasels there. And she started to sweep them up. They're small rodents. And he called out to her and said, leave them alone. The Torah says, V'rachamav al kol ma'asav. Hashem has pity and compassion on all of his creation. A person should not hurt any living thing. He said this. The voice came from heaven and said, because he has pity on others, therefore, let us have pity upon him, and let's remove the Yisurim now, at the end of 13 years. Now, of course, we mentioned previously that this pasuk, Rechamav HaKol Ma'asav, means that a person is supposed to have pity, kindness, on every living thing, besides, of course, human beings, which are above living things. If ever there's a question, a selection, alternative between human and animal, naturally, you're supposed to disregard the animal and care for the human. It's a matter of saving one or the other, you must save the human. It's a matter of saving one from pain or suffering, human comes first. Therefore, those who have too much pity on animals, like these groups or organizations, where they seek the protection of animals, when they go too far, we know that they are by nature achzarim. By nature they are cold-blooded, heartless creatures. When they say they have pity that animals should not suffer, as for example the anti-shechita organizations, because they have pity that animals should die without pain and so on, These people we know are Rishaim, evil throughout. This is a false front to cover their evil, their bitterness within them. Torah says you must have consideration for living things, Tzar Bala Chaim, do not kill or torture them needlessly. The Yehudi HaKadosh was so particular about this that he never killed an insect. Even an insect that did harm, even a mosquito, which is a type of pest that can cause, not the type that could cause a serious disease, but it could cause an unusual amount of discomfort. He would never kill a mosquito, though he was bitten by them. Also, this din of Tzar Bali Chayim, it was a living thing, and he avoided ever hurting one. Now, this is, of course, speaking superficially. We won't go into the depth. The true facts that the Rizal knew every living thing. He had the power of looking at an animal, or at a bird, or an insect, and he could see through the animal into the soul that was in this animal or bird, meaning the person who was reincarnated, the Gilgul, into this animal or bird or even insect. So knowing who this animal really was a person who had lived previously, what sins he had committed, he had pity on this Rasha who came back as a Gilgul temporarily as an animal or bird living thing, and he refused to hurt it while it was suffering, confined against its will, as this strange type of being. The din of Tzar Bali Chaim, pity on living things, is one that is min haTorah. Each person should be careful to avoid hurting any type of living thing. One who does that, we see proof here that in turn there is pity, compassion, and kindness for him from heaven. The Midrash says that the suffering of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbeinu HaKadosh was such, so valuable, that during the time of their Yisurim, the people were blessed. During the time of the Yisurim of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, no person during that time died young, died before the scheduled time. Scheduled time, of course, standard. Average lifespan is 70 years, as the Pasuk says. So no person died with part of his life cut off. The reason for this is that the Gemara says there is no such thing as death without sin. It is sin that causes death, meaning death before the time. Now, though there was sin prevalent at that time, when all these sins were taken by Rabbi Elazar, and through his Yisurim were forgiven, therefore there was no reason for death. There being no sin, there could be no death before the time. But during that entire period, no person died before his time. In the case of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, during the 13 years of his Yisurim, at no time did the country need rain. They never ran short of fertile ground without having to resort to rain. Though it did not rain, still, if they would pull up a bush upon which grew berries or different types of fruit, they would find a pool of water underneath it. It was a natural blessing of irrigation from heaven. This was in the Zechut of the Yisurim Rabbein HaKadosh. Now, to continue this, Rebbe saw that how great Rabbi Shimon was, so he said, I must do something for him. Did he leave a son? Did he have a son? And he inquired about this, and they told him, yes, he had a son. He has a son, a young son, young man, but we're ashamed to tell you about him. This son is very handsome, but he stays and he spends his time in places that are of ill repute. In fact, he is so desired by the illegal crowd that any zona, an illegal illicit woman who takes a certain price for a service is willing to pay him double of that which he takes. So desirable is he among women. Now, how can you help a boy like that? Rabbeinu Kadosh said he is the son of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. I am going to help him. He found him, he took him, talked to him and said, come with me. I'm going to bring you to new heights of glory. This young boy was willing, and he brought him to the brother of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's wife. That means the boy's uncle. He told him, take care of this boy, teach him Torah from the beginning, but keep studying with him until he becomes a big chacham. So he did this, and he promised the boy that he would have clothes of the best type with gold, actually golden clothing, and I'll have the great